Before we begin, I'd like to emphasize that this podcast is an extension of my surgical work and research at Visionary Eye Doctors, and thank you all for tuning in every week or multiple times to kind of hear about our research and how we help patients. And thank you to all of you who have flown in from all over the world to see us here, so I'm very humbled by that. So it is my hope and desire to keep this information free to all of you, especially to my dear patients. And in keeping with this mission, we are very thankful to our first sponsor for this podcast, Wizard Dry Eye Mask. Many of you have heard me talk about the Wizard before. I have loved this product for years. It looks like this. I have one right next to my bed. So does my husband. I used mine last night. And even, you know, if I can't sleep, I'll use it. It's a wonderful product that you just plug in next to your bed or even at your computer. I've been known, if I start to develop a sty, to do the Wizard as I type and then switch, you know, if I have warm, just like a warm compress. So it works wonderful for that. So thank you to the Wizard. If you mention our name, podcast, Visionary Eye Doctors, Dr. Kramer's, they'll give you a 1-year guarantee. If anything happens to the product, just call them up and they'll replace it for you for free. So thank you to the Wizard Research team for sponsoring this podcast. Enjoy. It's Dr. Sandy Laura Kramers. Thank you for joining us for the Eye Show podcast. Today, we're going to do the third part of a 3-part series on bioidentical hormones and its effect on your general health and specifically your eyes and also specifically on dry eyes. I get this question many times. Should I be on bioidentical hormones? What hormone should I try? And so forth. So as all women get older, this becomes a question. And as I was asking surgical friends, surgeons, friends who are roughly around my same age, female, nobody had a clue. So our dear friend, mutual friend Angela connected us, and Beth did a great job talking to a bunch of doctor moms as well as moms about bioidentical hormones. So let me introduce Beth to all of you. Beth Sutton is a family nurse practitioner who works in the area in Virginia, and she right now is at Pappas Health in Virginia, where she provides comprehensive care with a holistic patient-centered approach. She earned her Bachelor's of Science in Nursing from Boston College before advancing her expertise with a Master's in Nursing from Sacred Heart University. She specializes in hormone health, chronic illness, and detoxification. She's a certified midlife specialist through Wise and Well, a program designed to restore overall well-being in women ages 35 and older by addressing hormone, thyroid, and metabolic imbalances through lifestyle changes and targeted medical interventions. She, in addition to hormone health, Elizabeth has a strong background in Lyme disease and other tick-borne illnesses, as well as detoxification from mold exposure. She's committed to identifying and treating the root cause of chronic conditions, offering patients cutting-edge, evidence-based care to restore health and vitality. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you.
It's so great to see you.
An honor and privilege to be with you, Dr.
Thank
Kramer.
You. Thank you. So
listener.
We're going to basically talk today about your experience with bioidentical hormones in general health and a little bit on eye health. And when I mentioned this to my OBGYN earlier this year, he looked at me like, well, I don't know if he didn't believe my age or if he was kind of like, it was really funny. He was like, well, I don't think you should maybe do it. And by this time, we had had our conversation among the moms. So I knew that this is something I should probably look into. And I wasn't having any, you know, night sweats or anything like that. But as I get older, my eyes are getting drier. Is it screen time? Is it obviously the perimenopause, early menopause symptoms? And so let's talk about your experience. Tell me everything you know about bioidentical hormones, who should start it, when should you start it, all that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, just a quick side note. I think this all started, my interest in hormone health started when I started as a nurse practitioner, and I started dreading anytime I saw a 40 plus woman come in the door because they tend to have a very long list of issues. And a lot of times they're not generally responsive to some of the functional med stuff we do. They are a little bit, but they still are struggling a lot with fatigue, insulin resistance, their metabolic parameters start changing. And it just seemed like some of the things we were doing, I mean, gut health, focusing on their gut health always helps everybody, but there was something more and I knew I was missing a piece. And I also happened to be in the same age group. So it was a little bit of a wake up call for me at that time. And I was introduced to Wise and Well. which is two nutritionists who I think have all the right messaging on the perimenopause, menopause space. It's very, very evidence-based, so I highly recommend people following them. They have a great new book. But anyway, I pursued them. I took their course, and now I... I'm a big proponent of hormone replacement therapy, particularly bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. And I think it can apply in anybody, honestly, as long as they do not have active cancer in ages 35 and up, depending on their overall condition. So, my experience with hormones is that they have been the missing piece for a lot of women. As long as they're comfortable. But there's so many different strategies to apply hormone therapy. I mean, there's different ways to do it. So you always have to find the right fit for every individual woman. But in general, it has been the missing piece in those cases.
So the key thing was this large women's, I guess it was the nurse study that came out from Framingham that was the big alert in my mother's generation saying that hormone replacement therapy increased cancer. But now many doctors have talked about that study. I think it was retracted officially. Yeah. What's your experience and knowledge about that?
Yes. I mean, the Women's Health Initiative, right? It at that time, I think when the initial results came out, they basically pulled everybody off their hormone therapy. But when the investigators went back and reanalyzed the data, and they actually found that women that, and by the way, they were applying synthetic hormones broadly to all different people in different age groups. So that was part of the problem. But when they went back and reanalyzed the data, even women on estrogen therapy, and this was estrogen therapy alone, so these were women without a uterus. And this was, by the way, synthetic hormones at the time, so not bioidentical hormones. When they reanalyzed the data, they actually found that women in between age 50 and 60 actually had benefits. There was a cancer reduction, a cardiac risk factor reduction. So I think once that analysis came out, a lot of people that were in touch with the research started changing their tune because they realized how women were essentially dying on the vine without hormone replacement. So it allowed a rebirth, basically. But not everybody, not all doctors have been educated. And a lot of them are still very, very, very scared of hormones as a result.
So just to define terms, can you define, if you can, bioidentical hormones? What is the difference between synthetic and actually kind of non-synthetic? And also define functional medicine. Maybe we can take a moment here to kind of define those terms.
Sure. So bioidentical hormones are hormones that are made from a natural source that are constructed to be exact replicas of the chemical structure of the hormone that is in your body. Your body does not recognize when we give women bioidentical estradiol and progesterone, their body's cells recognize it as their own. It is a perfect fit to the receptor. So think about like a three-pronged plug. It goes, fits right into that outlet. Other hormones, even if they are made from a natural source, like the infamous Premarin, which is conjugated horse estrogen. Actually, the horses peed out their estrogen, and this
horse urine.
Horse urine. It was made from the metabolized estrogen from the horse. It can activate the human receptor, but it is not that perfect fit. So it doesn't have all the benefits. In fact, it might have some downsides and some negative risks when that receptor isn't perfectly, when that hormone and that receptor don't match perfectly. So that's basically the difference. A lot of people in the functional world will only use bioidentical hormone replacement because of that beautiful receptor fit. They can guarantee that it's having as close as possible action of those hormones in the body as possible. Whereas the more synthetic hormone, I don't even call them synthetic because some of them do come from a natural source. I would just say like non-bioidentical.
Okay, got it.
Does that make
sense? And so where are exactly are the bioidentical hormones coming from estrogen and progesterone, let's say?
They're plant sourced. Mm-hmm. And so like soy, then they're made in a lab. Or? I think yam and soy. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Yam and soy.
They are, yeah.
And so you're saying everyone after the age of 35 with and without symptoms, or how would you know you should start it?
Ooh, I think it's just looking at all of their parameters. You know, what has been a really useful tool is some of those new monitors like the Mira monitor, where we can actually monitor women's hormone levels every day. But really, it's just their clinical picture. After 35, progesterone and estrogen are both in decline. Mm-hmm. So progesterone tends to drop like a stone first, but estradiol is in decline. And it just depends on that woman's track, right? Mm-hmm. Like some women are going to go into menopause at 47 and some are going to go in at 54 and some there, then there's some, so it just kind of depends on the track, but it's really symptoms and the clinical picture. Now I will say when women, you can tell estradiol, at least this is in my experience clinically, I can tell estradiol is playing a picture when I see insert. So depending on the age, right? So you say 35, 38, 40, how do I know estradiol might be playing, low estradiol might be playing a part in this picture is when I see like a lot of insulin resistance going on in that age group. And they don't have, it's not like they're eating a super high carb diet. These people are exercising well, they're eating well, and they seem to, their lipids are going up and they're having more like an insulin resistance picture. They're having a lot of fatigue. That's when I know that probably maybe low estrogen is playing a part.
So do you actually do like a hemoglobin A1C to see if there's mm-hmm. insulin resistance? And then you'll also check the estrogen and progesterone levels. Mm-hmm. And of course, if somebody's obviously planning to get pregnant or pregnant, obviously they should talk to their OBGYN before doing any of this,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
But I guess from my point of view, I definitely see dry eye symptoms as a potential early sign of perimenopause, of course, menopause and postmenopause. And so what do you recommend general ophthalmologists or obviously, you know, specialists and dry eye, what would you say are the other symptoms they should be asking about? Obviously, dry eyes is a big one. What are the kind of top five questions you try to maybe ask?
I'm sorry. So, I mean, the patient.
Like, do you ask for night sweats or what are the other symptoms that would indicate?
Yeah, that's kind of the old school way of going about hormone replacement is seeing if the woman is having any symptoms of low estrogen. Mm-hmm. But what I see more than anything is a change in the blood work. You know, metabolic changes, A1C, lipids, triglycerides. Mm-hmm. I'll also see a lot of fatigue, a lot of women saying they're out of gas, a lot of cognitive changes. Mm-hmm. Starting at 40, women are like, I can't find the words. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a big sign that estrogen might be playing a picture. Mm-hmm. They're having a lot of brain fog. So those are the complaints that I get. It might not necessarily be the usual hot flashes, which might even trigger an OBGYN to give someone hormones, right? Mm-hmm. It's those other symptoms, fatigue, mm-hmm. cognitive changes, memory loss is a big one. Joint pain.
Not sleeping well.
Yes. Yeah. Not sleeping well. Joint pain. All of a sudden their joints. Dry eye for me has not been a huge complaint. Mm-hmm. It's dryness everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know if they're recognizing, my patients are recognizing dry eye. They're just like, I'm dry everywhere. Mm-hmm. So their hair's dry. And by the way, tinnitus, right? Because even the ear is sensitive to that dryness.
So the ringing cilia, in the ear, yes. Tinnitus, mm-hmm. yep.
Uh-huh. The cilial change as estradiol goes down, so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So how do you prescribe, like, let's say you do the panel, you see they're decreasing in their estrogen, progesterone. What level kind of, is it below normal? Is it at the lower end of normal? When do you start to treat and what exactly, how do you treat?
Okay. So, based on the clinical picture, when I draw a woman's serum estradiol, it really depends on where they are in their cycle. If they're not in menopause. If they're in menopause, most of them have menopausal labs, so their FSH is high and their estradiol is not detectable or below 15.
And right? FSH is follicular stimulating hormone.
Yes, yep. Thank you. I'm sorry. Follicular stimulating. That's the brain signal that tells the ovaries to make follicles. Now, obviously, the ovaries have decided they're going to sleep, so they're not responding. So that brain signal continues to try to get the ovaries to do something, even though they're sleep eternally. If I see that picture, I know actually a woman is a good candidate for hormone replacement, but there's a couple of other things that I want to work up first before I go right into hormone replacement. I do want to make sure their gut's in good shape. I want to make sure their diet and their exercise are dialed in. However, that is definitely the time for estradiol. That woman, her cells are starving at that point for hormones. Prior to that, I have to check, prior to menopause, I actually have to check levels at different times during the cycle. So I have to see if they're having, how high their peak is getting, which is kind of hard to track, you know, depending on when they ovulate. These have to be women that are really good at tracking. And then I might check at day 21. But now, like I was talking about, those Mira monitors, those where you can actually monitor your hormones. Now, these are metabolites in the urine, so it's a little different than the serum. Mm-hmm. That's actually helped a lot with women in the perimenopause space, mm-hmm. because I can, I know when they're peaking, and I can kind of tell their peaks from month to month. And mm-hmm. So that's been super helpful. But depending on their symptoms and depending on where they are, I would say most women, I have yet to prescribe actually hormones for a woman 35, but I would say women 40 and up are eligible. Mm-hmm. Not to say I wouldn't, I just haven't had women mm-hmm. in that age group that have needed it in my practice.
And what do you exactly prescribe?
I use only, by the way, transdermal estradiol. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that estradiol, it's E2.
So not a pill, not a
right?
pill.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because any estrogen, bioidentical or not, that goes into the mouth goes through first pass in the liver, and the liver will activate clotting factors. Mm-hmm. And that was another problem with the Women's Health Initiative, was that like women were mostly taking oral hormones. Mm-hmm. And so their clotting factors go up and they're more at risk for clots. We know that with the birth control pill, right? Mm-hmm. So I never give oral estradiol or any oral estrogen. It's always transdermal, and it's applied to the fatty parts of the skin, the inner arms, the inner thighs. And as far as progesterone goes, even if a woman, the old wisdom was that if a woman didn't have a uterus, so if it was removed by hysterectomy, they didn't need progesterone. But now, with all the research, and even in the dry eyes, they said women did better with combined hormones, right? Progesterone, should I still give it to my women without a uterus? They just don't need as much.
How much do you give if they have a uterus versus not for both estrogen and progesterone?
You know, it's interesting. It just depends. Some women are very sensitive to progesterone, mm-hmm. and some I have to give a low dose. Some want, my thyroid patients tend to really love progesterone, so they like higher doses. So I might give 50 milligrams to mm-hmm. a woman without a uterus, and that's fine for them. Mm-hmm. It's enough to activate the things that we want to activate. But for a woman with a uterus, I'll go as high as 200.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow. Depending, yeah.
And so, of course, this is also good for their bone health and yes. their heart health. And yes. one of the things that I think we briefly talked about, of course, is that there's been some studies to indicate, yes, the estrogen alone can sometimes make dry eye worse, but estrogen and progesterone can help dry eye in most patients. And it also, the estrogen plus progesterone bioidentical hormones seem to also have a protective effect against glaucoma, the optic nerve's damage, and macular degeneration, and even cataracts. So in a way, it does seem to make sense. So what yes. are the biggest risks of taking these medications?
The hormone replacement is not for anybody with active cancer. Mm-hmm. So for sure, because it is proliferative, right? Mm-hmm. Estradiol stimulates proliferation. That's why we have like amazing hair in pregnancy, right? mm-hmm. So it is not, I would say it is not for anybody with active cancer. Mm-hmm. And it is not, hormones are not for people with a really bad gut, because that gut helps to metabolize that estradiol. And so that has to be fixed first. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure that when you take estradiol, that it's being routed to the right metabolites, and the gut plays a big picture in there. So if women have pretty severe IBS, I'm like, we have to wait. Okay. Mm-hmm. So those are pretty much
bowel disease, yeah. IBS.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Yep. Dr.
No worries. That's okay. So, and then also, are you basically then monitoring these people once a year, these women once a year? Are you seeing them more often? How do you determine when to see them?
I check in at the month mark.
Okay.
1 month mark just to make sure everything's going okay. Mm-hmm. Some women will complain of some breast tenderness. There's some strategies to fix that, but that seems to be very alarming for women because mm-hmm. I think they're thinking in the background, oh, I heard estrogen causes cancer. Mm-hmm. So when their breasts get sore, it's just that tissue sort of waking up. I will check in at the month mark and then 3 months, six, and then just depending on the regimen. Okay. We can do yearly if they are happy and everything is, copacetic. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
We have a couple more minutes, but I want to get your email. How can patients contact you first? Yeah. And then we'll ask you a couple of minutes to talk about gut health. How do you improve your gut health since we're on this topic and we have you here? But how can people reach you?
Right now, they can reach me at my personal, it's in my personal nurse practitioner email. So it's Beth Sutton, FNP, like family nurse practitioner @gmail.com. That is not a HIPAA compliant email. Please don't send me your personal clinical information. However, if you have general questions, you can reach me. I am transitioning to a different practice. At this point, I'm starting my own female metabolic health practice. So once I have that up and running, I can give people that info if they want to email.
Congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you.
And so tell me about gut health. What do you do for gut health?
Oh, yeah. So that's
we can talk another hour on this.
I know. Five hours. Yeah. I think that, so the microbiomes of the people that live in the United States are a total disaster. And, we are lacking a lot of diversity and we do a lot of things to damage our gut health. All the toxins we breathe, the toxins we eat, the very high carb diet, low fiber diets, our gut health, we have really suffered from a diversity issue and we really need a healthy microbiome. So, I use strategies to look at the health of people's microbiome. I will say across the board, most of my patients need some work in that area, but I use a lot of targeted herbs, prebiotics, probiotics, anti-inflammatories, depending on what is needed there to fix people's gut health. Now, diet plays a huge part here. They did a study saying that to correct the average American's microbiome, 30 plus different phytonutrients are necessary. So plants, anything plant-based are necessary to repair per week. So 30 different per week to repair the American microbiome. The good thing about that is that any variety of a singular fruit, vegetable mat counts. So in my family, we try to actually count. But if you have like a Granny Smith apple or a red apple, that actually counts as two. Mm-hmm. So all the varietals count of one. So just like apples, oranges, all the different varieties actually count. Mm-hmm. So I do challenge people to try to get for their gut health, 30 plus phytonutrients in their body, plant-based foods. It's definitely a challenge, but that could help.
The gut flora is like another organ, mm-hmm, of course, mm-hmm. And we know that it does affect macular degeneration, glaucoma, probably dry eye, although I haven't seen a specific study on that, but I'm sure it probably is related. And everything, of course, how your mood, your sleep, and general kind of health, of course. So thank you for commenting on that. I will have to book my appointment to get my gut flora checked with you for sure.
Yeah.
Do you have any parting words for my patients?
Yes, I think that for all the female patients, actually, it's even good for men. Those two nutritionists I talked about, Kristen Johnson and Maria Klapps, they wrote a book called The Great Menopause Myth. And this is a phenomenal starter book. I make sure that every patient of mine reads this before we get started. So I highly, highly recommend it. And to get what I think is the best messaging and best up-to-date research, like an overview of research.
Great.
On hormones.
Thank you. Thank you, Beth. This was very helpful. Yeah. I learned a lot, even after having attended your kind of mini class before. So thank you to everybody who's tuning in. Please remember to pass this on to friends and family and please subscribe. That's the best way you can help us with our research here at Visionary.